Today, we are going to show that it's indeed possible to recover information from black hole. Namely, we are going to prove that scrambling implies recoverability. So, just to recap, Hayden Preskill's thought experiment was like of a black hole, and you throw a quantum state into the black hole. Then usually we put reference system, that's a bunch of BPL pairs. Then we have early radiation. This early radiation, so these two systems are maximally entangled with each other. Then later we will catch B, the late radiation. Then the claim was that by having access to early radiation, B prime, and late radiation, we should be able to reconstruct A. Now, but for in terms of equations or diagrams, very simple state we are considering A and A prime. Again, this is EPL. This was state, and I'm just gonna write down what these subsystems are: radiation and diary difference black hole. Okay, now what we know is that if mutual information is nearly maximum, then recoverable. This is what we know. And then we already showed that this for showed this for our random unitary, and we want to show this for scrambling unitary. Let's do that. So the idea is by using out-of-time ordered correlation functions, we want to compute this quantity. For this purpose, it's actually not the normal OTOC, but something called averaged OTOCs are useful. So average OTOC will be defined in the following way. So we are going to consider OTOC in the following form. Okay. So OA at time 0, OD at time t, and so and here I'm going to choose OA and OD to be unitary operator on A and D. And here, remember that A is the degree of freedom for the diary. So it's really like OA is your signal you're sending in to the black hole. Or the, then D is the late radiation. So we are measuring the correlation between input and output in this OTOC way. Now the point here is that well, we know that if the system is scrambling, this quantity becomes very small. If the system is not scrambling at all, these guys commute with each other, they get canceled, so it's one. So we know that this quantity is very small, but we're not really interested in like value of like this guy for particular choices of OA and OD. So we are just generically like interested in it's if it's generically small or not. For this reason, yeah, we are gonna focus on something called average odd. So that's defined in the following way. Now I'm gonna use this integral form, but this is really like just I'm declaring that we are gonna take an average, and I will explain what it means. But the quantity we want to compute, something like this. Okay, so this is a normal out of time ordered correlation function, but this integral means that this is actually the average, uniform average over all unitary way. That means that when you compute this average odd-odd, you just randomly pick one unitary operator OA and one unitary operator OD and then compute this guy, and then you keep doing that and you just take an average. This is a definition of averaged odd-odds. Again, just we are interested in like whether this is generically small one. And one minor comment is that this guy, there is a possibility of like picking up identity operator, right? Because this is a uniformly random unitary. So you could actually pick like identity operator. In that case, you will get one. So this guy actually don't go to zero, even in a free scrambling case, but it goes to a very small value if the system is scrambling. So scrambling actually implies a small average odd-odd. Okay, so it turns out the quantity we can compute or useful quantity is this one, averaged one, is actually sufficient to compute this guy.
Quick question. Yeah, well, so what do you mean exactly by an average, or like in the case of scrambling, that's mm-hmm. not a subset of unitary. So you take the average over that subset.
Mm-hmm.
Are you, how is there a technical definition of the measure for that?
Yeah, you just, so, right. So if this is a system of one dimensional qubits, it's like this. And then we declare like, I don't know, A, B, and so on.
My question is that you want to consider the case only of scrambling unitaries, that in the Haar measure, some subset of these unitaries are not scrambling.
Oh, so, Haar measure. No. U is fixed. So U is fixed. But I'm going to take this operator observables randomly.
I see. Okay.
And because U is fixed, the average is not zero, it's small.
Okay.
And because U is fixed, the average is small but not zero.
Oh, yeah. So because U is fixed, so yeah, we compute this quantity for some fixed unitary U. So yeah, basically you keep doing the same experiment for the same system many, many times. They measure these correlation functions. And then later, you take an average, and then yeah, what I change is the observable. Then the reason why this doesn't go to zero is that there is a small but non-negligible possibility that I might be picking up identity operator on A, because I'm taking average over all the unitary on A. So then sometimes I get Pauli X operator, sometimes I get X or Y, somewhere in between, but I might get identity operator in that case. Yeah, it's trivial, so it gives me one. So that probability is non-negligible.
But that would be just one. It's like measure zero subset.
Yeah, but I and near I is also,
okay.
It's also very bad. So for that reason, this quantity doesn't go to zero. And actually, it's it's lower bounded by minimum over I think, yeah, I think so the A is 2 to the anyway. Yeah.
So what is meant by the time evolution of OD in this case?
Time evolution is like, yeah, so this U, so OD is just the ODT is U OA, oh sorry, U T.
But this, that seems different than what you just said before, that you're applying this O on, like you apply U,
mm-hmm.
just some scrambling, whatever, and then you are somehow putting these OA and OD on the output, but you're actually applying more copies of U after that.
I don't know. So definition of this otok, this guy, he is this trace of this thing. So then here, it's computed for fixed unitary U. Yeah, so it's just we're gonna span the Hilbert space like a bunch of qubits. So A is these two qubits, for instance. Then we are gonna pick random unitary from A region, A subset, then random unitary D. Then we are gonna compute the out of time ordered correlator. But we make sure that the D is a time evolved one. Initially they are non overlapping, so you will get one, but eventually if they get interacted and overlapping, then this value will generically very small. Yeah, so you can just assume like taking average is just usually, I mean, you just pick one random unitary on A and one random unitary on B, and you just compute this quantity. Now, so I said that it's actually like it's a good point to say this. So taking average over all the possible unitary operator on A and all the possible unitary operator on D, but these averaging can be actually replaced, and then so for instance, if you have a time evolution or unitary transformation over all the random unitary operator, that is, you are given an operator O, and you transform it with random unitary and taking average, then this essentially depolarizes, so because unitary changes the direction, so it depolarizes. So then, but it turns out that this effect is same as taking average over all the Pauli operators. And now the set of Pauli operators is discrete, so I use integral, but more precisely, it should be like right, so there are 4 to the n possible Pauli operator in my Hilbert space. So yeah, I just take an average over all the Pauli operators. It turns out these two are equivalent. And because of this, actually the computation, the otok average can be reduced to the following. So PA and PD are local Pauli operator supported on A subsystem and D subsystems. Then we are going to just compute I'm going to just put dagger, but it's for Pauli, it's same, but so That is, you just pick Pauli operators randomly, like x or y or z or sometimes identity operator, and compute this object. Then, yeah, you take an average over all the autos. Again, u is fixed. But then, yeah, it turns out that this average over all the unitary a and all b can be replaced.
This average is over all unitaries OA, OD, and not only how random ones, something like that.
So it's a how random on A subsystem. Yeah. And
okay, so
it's not the whole system.
Yeah, but OA is all unitaries possible on A subsystem,
mm-hmm.
or only how random unitaries possible on A subsystem?
Yeah, so OA is all the possible unitary operators acting on
A.
Mm-hmm, A subsystem.
But that the formula that you wrote down there
is yeah. So this formula itself applies to the whole system, but you can actually like look at the subsystem and then yeah, it's essentially the same. So
what I was thinking is there. So what I was confused is there you have all unitaries where here you are.
Oh yeah, so maybe I should be more precise by doing this, I guess. Yeah. This is also possible. Yeah. Okay. So yeah, so we use this fancy integral notations and so on, but in the end, what we should be doing is just compute autoc for random Pauli operator. That's a more physical thing to look at. And then I just want to emphasize again that this dA square is 4 times nA. This is basically number of Pauli on A. Because I have I, x, y, z, so there are 4 choices for each qubit, so 4 to the n. Okay. So another important fact we should probably know is that how this thing works, this integral formula. So u all sandwiched by u. And then, as I said, that this depolarizes because if my operator has a preferred direction, like if I'm in a Pauli Z operator, let's say, then yeah, my direction will be completely random after this transformation. Because of that, only the component of operators which is like independent of the direction remains. And because of that, it turns out that the following should be true. That is, if the system is only the trace, because trace is a non-directional quantity that remains invariant and unitary, so that's the only element you get, and you will only get identity operator. And this is something you can prove by directly doing this, like computing Pauli operators, averages, and so on. For this reason, this kind of transformation is often called depolarization. This is a very powerful formula when we compute this average autoc, because we will be taking average over OA. That means like you see OA and OA dagger, and then ODT is sandwiched by OA and OA dagger. You will be able to use this kind of formula. But now again, I personally prefer to write things by using diagrams. So let me just do it. So this is a thing, U or U dagger, I'm evolution. Now, we take average, this dotted line just represents the average. And then this formula just says that, well, if we have something like this, O should be summed up with this closed loop. This corresponds to the trace. Then there is an original line here. These lines sort of avoid this guy because this becomes identity operator. And then you need a factor of 1 over D. So in terms of a diagram, this is just formula. All right, so now hopefully that with these techniques, you see how this quantity should be computed. We see OA and OD sandwiching. So we should be able to use this kind of trick. Like whenever you see sandwich, this one, then that element, that portion will be traced out. We are going to use.
Benny,
mm-hmm.
Could you just motivate again why we're interested in this averaged OTOC?
Okay, averaged OTOC. The reason why, well, that's actually what I'm going to say. We want to compute I, A prime, B prime, D, mutual information, and then we want to show that it is nearly maximal. And it turns out that if you compute this average OTOC, then this allows me to directly compute that quantity. Namely, I can show that if average OTOC is very small, then this mutual information is nearly maximal. That's how we are going to our goal. All right, so let's compute I, A prime, B prime, D. And I said we're going to compute this guy, but it's actually the quantity we are going to compute is the Reni 2 version of this quantity. It's a bit different, but we have already seen that this is also a good quantity when we want to discuss the recoverability. So let me compute this quantity. So it's just defined in this way. Instead of computing the mutual information with von Neumann entropy, we use a Reni entropy. And then just to recap, Reni entropy is defined as is this true? So I where? Yeah, okay, good. Anyway, this is a quantity we want to compute. Now, so we need to compute these three quantities, but it turns out that looking at that wave function we have, you see that A prime is just part of the EPRP. So this is actually just equals to NA because A prime is maximally mixed. So yeah, it should be NA. And is A prime, B prime, D sounds a bit complicated, but the truth is this is just equals to SC2 because the whole system is pure. Now SC2 is the initial state is if I trace out A prime and B prime, the C and D is just a maximally mixed state. This means that so lossy is maximally mixed. This means that this is just equals to NC. Okay. So this is the only quantity we don't know how to compute. And in order to compute this quantity, we just need to evaluate rho BD, especially rho BD square.
The C subsystem is maximally entangled with D. How did we see that?
No, oh, no, no. It's actually, you can show that low CD is already maximally mixed state.
Yeah, that part I didn't understand. How can we show that if U was...
Yeah, so initial state, if I trace out A prime and B prime, then A and B is maximally mixed state. If I unitary evolve maximally mixed state, it's still...
Also, this is on the tutorial that we're continuing on Monday.
Okay.
Great. All right, so... Yeah, so this is the only quantity actually we don't know how to compute. So let's compute this. And then, yeah. The point is that this auto-averages allow us to compute this quantity. But let me just... tell you the final result we are getting, and we are going to derive that. So the auto average quantity we have been mentioning, it turns out this guy is equals to exactly equals to yeah. Okay. So that's something we are going to derive. So this means if this is small, then yeah. This will be large. So scrambling, yeah, indeed, suggests that the information will be recoverable. Okay, so that's how the scrambling is related to recoverability. So yeah, just to recap, the autoc is related to operator growth and so on. But if you look at the average autoc, that actually allows us to directly compute mutual information.
Good question.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I don't quite understand yet is where the symmetry between C and D is broken, because it feels like
it's
C with D with C everywhere. Where is the computation going to go?
Yeah, mathematically it's not broken. It's just a formula, so it's true. But physically, D is always a smaller subsystem. C is the bigger subsystem.
Sure.
Yeah. So that's the only.
So is that why it's
different?
Working for D, but not, it works for the smaller subsystem. Is that the idea?
I mean, if she, so I think your question is like, can be answered by like, let's say if D is very, very big, then there is no surprise that we can reconstruct the information. D is the amount, D is the degree of freedom we are catching. So, but still, I mean, we want to show the information recovery when D is still very small. And then, yeah. That's why. Yeah,
at the same time, if I can recover with D, I can't recover with C.
If you can recover with D, you cannot, then that means, so, I think this is true, so, so if this is large, then this is small. So you cannot recover the information from C. But if this is small, then you can recover the information from C, meaning like remaining black hole. The information hasn't.
B prime C.
Sorry?
What about if I did B prime C?
Yeah, B prime C. So here we are assuming that D is much, much smaller, right? So yeah, then C is larger than D, so this is usually like larger than this one. So, oh yeah, yeah. So that's kind of a, maybe I should make this comment. So again, this is a quantum error correcting code in a sense, like I'm hiding information into three subsystems, C, D, B prime. A is the input, and C, D, B prime are the output. And then what we see is like, if we have access to D and B prime, you can reconstruct. That's what Hayden Preskill said. But at the same time, if you have access to C and B prime, so B and the B prime, it's recoverable. But okay. That's what Hayden and Preskill said. But if you have access to C and B prime, it's again recovery is possible. But of course, if you have access to C and D, then you just need to do the inverse of the unitary, so it's recoverable. So you see that if you have access to two of the subsystems, you can always recover the initial information. But one is not enough. Okay, now let's just compute this Otto average. So Otto average, so now I'm gonna do the calculation all based on these diagrams, because otherwise, honestly, I don't know how to do the calculation, because yeah, it's very complicated. So with diagrams, it's probably very easy. Shouldn't forget the factor 1 over d. Okay, so this is the out of time ordered correlation function. D is sandwiched by unitary operators, a and a. I should put dagger here. Then we are going to take an average. Now, when we take the average, we just should use that formula. So let's do that, and then how should I do that? The rule is, if I take an average, then basically you should do this. That is, the portion that is sandwiched by OD and OD dagger will be replaced by trace. And traces this connecting line. And you do the same thing for OA. So OA sandwiches this portion of U and U dagger. So, yep.
In the photo, OA does not evolve in time, right? OA is at.
Yeah, OA is equal to 0. OD is sandwiched by U. U dagger and U. So this is the, this portion is like ODT. This portion is ODT. So OA 0, ODT. I feel like this should be actually U dagger U or U U. Wait, it doesn't matter. Okay, so this is what we should be doing. Now this now look a bit ugly, so let me rewrite it. I again need to draw four boxes. U dagger, U dagger, U, and now this line is complicated, but it looks like this. And this blue line go all the way, but you can just move it. And then, of course, I need to keep track of all the factors. So, something like that. Okay, then now we will start forgetting about indices. Let me add it back. Okay, so this is just a drawing. And then, yeah, what is this theory? Now, we want to show that this is, yeah, really like row B prime D. The reason is, let's recall that the row is blanket of the original function. So, yeah, so just you prepare two kinds of copies, A prime, B prime, CD, right? And then factor of B. Yeah, this is the just row because this is blah and cat, and just two of them. So this is row. Now you see that we have U and U dagger twice. So you in this diagram, row square, row and two copies of row are hidden. Now given this definition of row, which is row actually A prime C D B prime, we can compute row B prime D by again, connecting lines. Let me connect the lines. U dagger. So this means like I'm going to take a trace of A degree of freedom and C degree of freedom. Connecting lines. C, that's connecting lines. The C, A, yeah. Okay, so yeah, like that. So you just connect lines, that is. Now, if I do that, I hope that you can see this. That is this portion. Here you see that U and U dagger, two of them, like a row. But then I connected A lines and C lines. So it's I'm taking a trace of A and C. Then only B and D are remaining. So this is actually row B and D. And then the same here. So, but then you see that I'm just doing the product of row BD, two of them, because I'm connecting lines, which is multiplications. So then it turns out this object exactly equals to trace of times d square, I think. Yeah, you need to be very careful about these coefficients, but am I really correct about these coefficients? Okay, yeah. Now let me just change this coefficient and write it in a different way. Not cheating, okay. D get canceled and because is. Anyway, I just rewrote it. Now, by doing this, it's almost there. Almost there, so this auto average. Let me just rewrite it. This means DC is just 2 times the Rényi entropy of C. dA is the Rényi entropy of A. This guy, two minus Rényi entropy of the C. So what you see is 2 times minus SBD plus SC2, ST, C was SA2, so this is just equals to 2 minus I2. Okay. So auto coverage is actually indeed equals to related to the Rényi mutual information. So yeah, so this gives a proof that the information is indeed recoverable from the black hole. So yeah, so this is kind of nice because we have been discussing information loss puzzle, especially the Page's thought experiment and the Hayden-Bresky thought experiment. And then so from the outside picture, we have seen that the Hayden-Bresky thought experiment might run into the cloning puzzle, two copies outside and inside and so on. And then we argue that maybe black hole complementarity can resolve that and so on, but all the conclusions are based on the Hall random calculations. But these conclusion applies to actual black hole dynamics as well, because we know that, well, at least in the holography, it's rumbling, and that's something you can compute by gravitational shock waves. And then, so assuming the system is scrambling in the sense of Ortok, you can prove that the information is recoverable.
Mm-hmm. So I'm a bit confused now. So you say that this black hole can be not Hall random, right?
So U is a unitary of the black hole's dynamics.
So if I try to plug this back into Page model, right, where U is Hall random, then is there any simplification going on here?
I mean, if I use Hall random thing, then so you wanna do U unitary U being Hall random?
Harder than the Page one, but
no, it's just in the Hall random case, yeah, of course you can just directly compute this Rényi to mutual information, which is, I mean, in the lecture I didn't do that, but probably it's something the tutorial it will be covered.
Okay, so it's just a matter of how difficult it is to compute the...
Well, how difficult in a sense, like, I mean, it's more like the question, originally the question was, Hayes said that we don't know much about black hole's dynamics, especially its quantum gravity, so let's assume that it's evolving on the Hall random unitary. And then for Hall random, it's everything is computable, and then he computed and then he came to that conclusion. But we all know that the black hole is not evolving under Hall random unitary. So the real question is on the actual dynamics of the black hole, all these conclusions still hold or not. And then still we don't have full grasp of the quantum dynamics of the black hole, but there is, at least for sure, we know that it is scrambling. That's something we can directly compute and verify. Then we can compute out of time order the correlation function. So that's the clue we have. Then even with this limited clue that it's scrambling in a sense of out of time order the correlation function, you can already show that the information is recoverable. That's what these results mean. Yeah, so indeed, like yeah, you can tweak this argument a little bit and then actually argue that, show that the page curve behavior can emerge as long as this kind of scrambling happening. Now, I only have 10 minutes and I was planning to talk about how we actually recover the information, but I'm not sure if I have enough time or not. So I'll just write down the protocol and then leave the rest to you or Emmy. If you are curious, you can walk through. If you are not, you can just know the protocol. So for a long time, yeah, so when Hayden and Presky wrote their paper and this beautiful paper, still there are two questions. That is, can we actually recover the information in actual black holes dynamics? That problem is now solved, but can we really reconstruct the information from a black hole or not? That's really, question. I mean, this is not an experimental question in a sense, like maybe we are all to use like infinite amount of funding and hire infinite amount of good experimentalists, and then still, like, can we do such a recovery under our current fundamental physical law or not? It turns out this is indeed possible. And then, so I just want to tell you the recovery protocol. So here's the input degree of freedom, and then this is EPR pair. This is a setup, and then we have access only to D and D prime. And then there are several versions of the recovery protocol, but this one is a bit inefficient, but it works universally for all the scrambling dynamics. The way it works is that essentially you view that this is a two-sided black hole, left hand side and right hand side. And then you try to mimic what's going on the left hand side here. What you should do is actually, you essentially do the same thing. So because this one should be a complex conjugate. Put EP up here. You even like copy and the mimic the reference system here. That's what we do. And then we do the similar time evolution. Then you decided to catch late radiation and also the mirror of the late radiation on the left hand side. Then the protocol goes like this. You catch this pair of the late Hawking radiations and then make a Bell measurement. Then it turns out that if EPL, by EPL, I mean this 00 plus 11, this particular state is measured. So input psi that enter the black hole from A actually pops up here. Then it appears on the other side. It's quite surprising in a sense, like you just mimic these things and then make a better measurement or project these two into EP up here, and then this guy sitting here, one side of the black hole just jump to the other side of the. And you can actually directly compute the fidelity of this reconstruction and so on. And then this fidelity of reconstruction and so on directly related to the photo average quantity. You may think that this recovery protocol is only working probabilistically. You need to measure EP up here. That is true. But there is a version of a deterministic algorithm which actually uses the global search algorithm. Roughly, the idea is you search for EPR pairs on D and D prime by using global algorithm, and then you can turn the algorithm into a deterministic one. But anyway, this is how it works. So yeah, so it's indeed possible to do the recovery. So then previously, some people said like maybe we can't really recover the information, so we don't care about potential cloning puzzle and so on. But yeah, we can't say that anymore. It is indeed possible to reconstruct the information. Anyway, so that's all I think I wanted to say, but I have still 5 minutes, so maybe I can take some questions. Or
sounds like in, let's say, in the quantum error correction setting, that you also need the full knowledge of you to have this protocol.
Yeah, of course. Now, yeah, of course, we need to know you. In some sense, a bit strange saying like quantum gravity is difficult, and then so you is. So we need to know the unitary dynamics of the black hole, definitely. But this is really, I want to emphasize that this is not a problem of quantum gravity in a sense like when we talk about information recovery, even in a classical setting, if we don't know unitary U dynamics, then this question cannot be asked. For instance, I prepare secret binary number 0 or 1 and then send it to you. Then if you see 0 or 1, then you can guess if I prepared 0 or 1. But secretly, if I have secret dynamics which flips my bit, if you didn't know about my dynamics, then you will give me incorrect guess. So this, we of course need to know you, but this is not a problem of quantum gravity, but it's like information theoretically, we need to assume that U is known. Otherwise, we can't ask this information recovery problem. I mean, if we don't know unitary fully, then from the perspective of the observer, it's same as non-unitary depolarizes.
Just one unrelated question. So if let's say I change all these qubits into like harmonic oscillators, does the argument break?
Oh, harmonic oscillators. All of these calculations naively it doesn't carry out for the reason that the harmonic oscillator is infinite dimensional system. So I need to impose some cutoff, and then I need to impose some maybe energy cutoff or something so that the total Hilbert space dimension is finite. Then if we do that, then it's very likely that all these things still hold. And yeah, but continuum is really a difficult issue. So again, I think like all these arguments, I don't think like ADS-CFT correspondence is the limitation. It's more like a finiteness of the Hilbert space is the limitation of these arguments. So all these arguments relies on that, like Bekenstein-Hawking bound. Yeah, but if we accept that, then somehow we assume that such kind of bound is enforced, then yeah, I feel like it's not a big problem.
Yeah, but that means the bound essentially says that I have to think of the black hole as not even containing even just one single harmonic oscillator, right?
Yeah. Then the standard argument is like if you want to store so many Hilbert space in one harmonic oscillator, eventually you will go beyond the Planck energy, then that harmonic oscillator will be a black hole. And then, yeah. But still, like, we, at least I don't know how to address such microscopic question